All right. Good evening, everyone. We are getting ourselves ready for another RCFB talk. It's RCFB Talk 34. Today we're going to have a big guest. So we're going to go ahead and add the co-hosts, Sirius, and of course, JD. And we are going to be joined by none other than Bo Pelini. So we are going to go ahead and set that up right now. Because, of course, Twitter does not give us a green room. We have to do this all on the fly. There we go. All right. So, JD, Sirius, are you on right now?
Yes, sir. I am here.
Awesome. Bo Pelini, are you with us right now?
I am.
Excellent. And I'm going to go ahead and add Pat as well. All right, Pat, we got you up here.
How's it going, everybody?
Good to hear from you. Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear. All right. Well, I'm going to step back and let JD and Sirius take off. Bo, just wanted to say first, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Coach, we really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. We're really excited to talk about some of the new ventures that you're up to. Really excited to have your son up here as well. I know y'all are going on and doing some big things together. But first and foremost, how is life treating you these days?
Things are good, I'm, kind of enjoying my, I mean, when you coach as long as I did, and it's nice to have this some free time and. You know, it's spending. I'm in Chicago today, and moving around and having some fun, doing some travel and seeing my family. And my Patrick and I started this. We just started a podcast, so we're having some fun with that. And I'm enjoying life and playing a lot of golf. Not very well, but I'm playing and I'm enjoying myself.
That's great to hear, Coach. You've had, as you mentioned, quite a long career. You coached at pretty much every level from high school all the way up to the NFL. You chose to retire, and we're going to talk about Youngstown and the impact that it's had on football later on in the show. But whenever people think about Youngstown, obviously there's two coaching families that come to mind, and that would be the Stoops and the Pelinis. And you all went to the same high school, Cardinal Mooney. You got to coach for Ron Stoops or play for Ron Stoops Sr. Got to coach with your brother Carl and with Ron Stoops Jr. at Youngstown State. Thinking about when you chose to retire and why you chose to retire and step away from actively coaching, kind of also brings to mind for me when Bob Stoops chose to retire a few years ago at Oklahoma. And a lot of people commented that, he was around 54 at the time, and that was the same age as his dad was when he passed, tragically, after a Cardinal Mooney football game. You're 54 now. You also have chosen to retire. What kind of went into the decision that you had to say, this is it. It's time to step away from the field and pursue other interests? Practice my golf game and step away from coaching.
I don't know if I never really officially retired or said, but I've always said I would never say never as far as going back. But it's changed. A college football has changed, and it's changed drastically over the last couple of years. And if the right situation ever came up, I might think about it. And that would mean geographically, it would mean who I was working with and or for. It would have to be the perfect situation. And I don't even know if that exists right now, but I've coached for a long time, and like I said, I think the sport has changed, the environment's changed, not only in college but in the NFL. And I just don't know if it's for me right now. And I just, you know, life's too short. I mean, we guess you get to be my age and you get to be 54 and you start losing some friends and you start seeing some things that, you know, I want to be able to enjoy my life, enjoy my family, my wife. And, you know, we made a lot of sacrifices to do what I did for all those years. And I don't know if I, you know, I've always said, I always knew I wasn't going to coach forever. And, you know, we just felt like the time was right. Basically, there wasn't a job for me that I was real interested in. And if that changes, it changes. If it doesn't, I'm content with, you know, with what I'm doing.
And I know one of the things that you're getting to do right now is this new podcast with your son. We took a listen to that first debut episode, but I am kind of curious why the shift into podcasting. I know that you mentioned some opportunities with your son, but is there something specific like messages that maybe you didn't get to express as a head coach or opportunities that you didn't get to do in football that you ideally want to do in media?
You know, I think part of it is, you know, and Patrick encouraged me to do this, really, along with some of my other family and friends. That, you know, I have a message I'd like. I think that would be. I think people will enjoy and would like to hear. And I think I could. Hopefully, people will benefit from it because we're going to have some sports personalities on it, some business people, and you, like you said, we grew up in Youngstown. We grew up in there are a lot of successful people that have come out of there, coaches and business people alike. And I think it's because of the values and many of the things that we were taught growing up and that we experienced growing up. And I'd love to be able to share that with people. And along the way, I'm going to have my say on some things that I'd like to get out there, you know, because I always thought that I got painted at times unfairly. And I think this will give a chance for some people to see me. And that's really not the motivation of why I'm doing it, but I think people will see that there's a different side of me that I think that really only people really knew that part of me were the people who coached with me and played for me. But like I said, I thought at times the mainstream media portrayed me unfairly and I never really, I take exception to that.
Also, I think it's, oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Patrick. No, we just wanted to say, I don't think we actually said the name of the podcast. It's Beyond the Playbook. You can find it everywhere you can find podcasts. It's at BYP Podcast on Twitter. But otherwise, you should be able to track it down, Beyond the Playbook. And Pat, I want to let you chime in. I know you wanted to add something.
No, definitely. I appreciate it. We're actually going to have – we'll include the Beyond the Playbook Twitter account, you know, as we kind of go throughout this space for, you know, for the next hour. But, you know, just wanted to add a little bit on to, you know, what we're going to be talking about. So our first season, we kind of start in the Youngstown area and we talk, you know, to our family members who played for, you know, for my dad and my Uncle Carl at Nebraska. And, you know, we get Will Compton on the podcast, who's obviously done super well in that space. Vince Merrow is a tight ends coach and recruiting coordinator, who's also from Youngstown. He is he's coached with my dad at Nebraska. It was a great interview. We're dropping them and then throughout the next few weeks. But we're super happy that you guys are having us on tonight and to talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah. So, and by the way, Pat, I was wondering, what's it like doing a podcast with your dad?
It's been great. It's been a pretty hectic situation. You know, cause I'm currently working in Chicago, but you know, this is an opportunity that my family saw as a really cool thing to do now that, you know, we're both in points of our lives where we saw an opportunity. And I think it's great cause you know, we've had so much support from friends and family to do this because, you know, I think a lot of people have, you know, kind of seen the Pelini family in a different light, but we have some awesome stories to tell. And you know, we don't think we're as bad as some people have painted us out to be like my dad said, but, you know, wanted to definitely include a lot about Youngstown in this first season of Beyond the Playbook podcast. It right now, we, you know, it's, you know, it, we're still in the process of kind of producing our first season, but we're going to release week by week. And, you know, we hope to bring a, you know, some good vibes and some fun stories to tell, you know, about college football, about NFL football, and, you know, talk sports, talk business with whoever it is we bring on. And, you know, it's actually been, you know, I thought it would be a cool thing to do. I didn't realize the amount of support we'd be getting. And it's honestly been a really cool opportunity for us to, you know, work together as a family. You know, I always wanted to play for my dad at Nebraska. So, you know, while that didn't work out, you know, this is something else that, you know, being able to work with him is obviously a really, really cool opportunity for us. And it, and I think my family really likes to see it as well.
Coach, in your the first episode of your podcast, you mentioned that, you know, when you first, especially when you got first introduced at Nebraska, that a lot of the media representation of you, it was always an adjective and then your name. And you mentioned things like fiery Bo Pelini and things like that. What adjective, if you were the one writing the article, would you have picked to put in front of your name? And what do you think that the media and their representations or misrepresentations of you, what do you think they got the most wrong? You know, years later, what still kind of eats at you a little bit of how they portrayed you to the public?
Well, I just think they harped on, you know, Nebraska was a different place. It's, you know, as you know, it's a different animal. And I mean, at one point, you know, like I always say those adjectives, at one point, I think, you know, the one guy said, he's a gunslinger. What the hell does that mean? I mean, seriously, like, what is it? What does that even mean? Like, what am I back in the Wild West? Am I Billy the Kid? I mean, like, just stupid things like that. It's like, come on, man. You know, it's, I'm a coach, and you know, people, they thought that, you know, I held kids accountable, and you know, I remember, you know, I just getting villain, you know, made out to be a villain for disciplining a player, yelling at a kid on the sideline, and. And, you know, they just wouldn't let certain things go. And where, you know, I mean, and believe me, I made my share of mistakes. I'm not perfect. And you know, and there are some things that I, you know, did wrong, learned from, moved on, whatever it may be, you know, be it with a referee or a call or whatever it may be. And but it was like I could never. You know, like some people, they brush it under the table, you know, and or they move on from it. It was like I was never able to move on from it where, you know, I mean, I have so much respect for Nick Saban, but he would do it or somebody like that would do it. And, you know, in a different environment, a different town, a different college football landscape, they were able to move on from it. I wasn't.
In looking back, what do you want that era to be remembered and defined as? Because we know there's the narrative that is out there already, but if you got to handpick what you should be remembered for, what do you think your era at Nebraska should have been and should be?
Oh, you mean when my time at Nebraska?
Yeah, or at Youngstown, just generally in general, when you think of these narratives that you want to have changed, what do you want those narratives changed to?
I must say this, that is not my motivation for doing this podcast.
Oh, I mean, certainly not. Certainly not. That's not
part of it. But we're having some fun and I'm enjoying it. I want the people who listen to the podcast to A, be entertained, but B, to get something out of it. I always think there's too much bad noise out there for people right now with some of the things that, you know, people listen to or whatever it may be. I hope that it's beneficial, but my time at Nebraska and Youngstown, I would hope that we won, we did it consistently, and in the end, I think our kids, we did it the right way. Our kids graduated at the highest level. They represented the schools they played for extreme. Our kids weren't out there getting in trouble. They represented well. We were very consistent. About how we went about our work. We won a lot of football games. And I mean, I think that you look at Nebraska, I think they're going to be hard pressed to win at that level for the amount of time that we did it for over that, what, 7 or 8 years that we were able to win at a consistently high level every single year. I think people are seeing right now that isn't very easy to do.
Coach, a lot of comments got made about, you know, September 4th, Bo Pelini Day. You went 9-4 again. As you noted, you won a lot of football games at Nebraska. And compared to some of the other
colleges. Too, about nine games. We won 10 three or four times.
Right, right. You know, everybody wants to go for the easy jokes, but you won a lot of games there. And as we've seen since you left Nebraska, it's been something that a lot of coaches have struggled to do, to come close to the level of success that you had when you were there. Obviously, the record, the history that they had back in the 90s plays a role in the mindset of the fans. But what do you think are the big challenges for a program like Nebraska that had success in the past, that seems to really just be struggling, not just finding success currently, but also being okay with getting to 9 or 10 or 11 win seasons instead of, you know, the mindset of we have to be competing for a national championship every single year with an actual chance to make the title game?
Well, anybody who thinks that they're going to compete for a championship every year is delusional. That's not happening there anymore. That it's a different day and age. It's a different time. And it may happen here and there, but you're in a place where you don't have a very good recruiting base. You have a lot of challenges. There's a tremendous amount of challenges. And the whole college football landscape has changed. And I don't see it happening. And I think that anybody who thinks that's going to happen consistently at Nebraska, it's not going to happen. And, you know, it's a different day and age. And, you know, we'll talk about that some on the, you know, in some of my episodes of Beyond the Playbook as we go, you know, with some of the guests we have and that type of thing. But I just think it's a, it's a time where back when, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it was a day and age where there's only so many people that were going to be on TV. And, you know, you got people to come to Nebraska that weren't necessarily going to be able to come there or go anyplace else. And now, you know, you have to beat everybody. You go into Florida or, you know, you go into Orlando, Florida, you got to beat Central Florida where, you know, if a kid chooses Central Florida or a little bit smaller school or a school with not as much prestige, they might take that over Nebraska these days because they're going to be on TV regardless because almost everybody's on TV now. So there's just a lot of things that don't lend to a place that doesn't have a strong recruiting base competing year in and year out for a national championship.
Speaking of recruiting, you mentioned a couple of things that have changed in the landscape of college football, and I'm sure recruiting is a massive change in that. You were a head coach at Nebraska, then at Youngstown State. Then you got to see kind of a more modern version of the monster that's the SEC right now at LSU. What would you say has been the biggest change in recruiting over the last couple of years in college football?
Well, we've talked about this on our podcast on Beyond the Playbook just the other day that in one of our latest episodes was talking about how the NIL even more so than that, the transfer portal have changed college football, and in my opinion, it's not for the better. And you know that's a totally different day and age. And I think that everybody realizes that there are some serious problems with it. And I just don't know if there's any going back now. That's the problem. You know, kind of once you let the cat out of the bag, it's hard to put it back in. I don't know if they're going to actually be able to fix the problems that they've created because they, they kind of jumped out there and made some decisions, and I don't think made some role changes very, very quickly, and I don't think they were well thought out.
Coach, if I could just follow up on that. So what are you, how do you feel some of those negative aspects are that come from all of these changes?
Well, I think that, like I said, the NIL, and more importantly, the transfer portal, where anybody can transfer anywhere at least one time. And it's like free agency. And it's like everybody's an unrestricted free agent all the time. And I don't think that's good for anybody. I don't think that's good for the schools, the programs, the kids. I know it's not good for Bo Pelini because I don't think I would be, I don't agree with it. I think it's teaching the wrong things. And if a kid doesn't get instant gratification, I'm going to leave. There are a lot of issues with it. And in the NIL, that's a whole nother conversation of paying kids before they've played a down of football. And, I think it's going to be real interesting. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, and also, I think, and we talk a little bit about this on Beyond the Playbook on the podcast, and, you know, we talk a little bit about how it also, it just has changed, you know, how coaches have to operate on a daily basis. It's I don't think a lot of people realize the amount of time that goes into, you know, the recruiting aspect of things, and it's a real grind, especially for a lot of the assistant coaches that are, you know, trying to recruit, you know, specifically, you know, for their position groups. And, you know, whenever you have to recruit kids in your own building and you have to, you know, you have to be able to, you know, continue to recruit your own kids that are already on your team, it makes it extremely difficult for like these teams that, you know, are not these powerhouse blue blood programs that, you know, can pick and choose who they want from the transfer portal. And I think it just creates gives a lot of teams an unfair recruiting advantage, in my opinion, that I think is going to take away from, you know, the greatest part about college football, which is, in my opinion, you know, the upsets that you see from week to week. And, you know, whenever you're putting all the, you know, whenever you're able to, you know, see that, you know, that a team like Iowa State, for example, is bringing in, you know, brings in a really good player that wasn't very highly recruited, ends up being a super valuable player in college football for their team. And, you know, if they, you know, they end up transferring to a team like Alabama, who already, you know, has that huge recruiting base, I think it just creates a, you know, an unfair advantage for a lot of these, you know, smaller market teams, if that makes sense.
I certainly could believe that. And I know that with you, Patrick, I know one of the things was you played at Notre Dame. And I'm also a little curious. I know that we talk about, you know, players having to be recruited on their own teams, having to make sure that they're still part of the culture. But you're a guy who, when you were at Notre Dame, you know, we talk about players deciding to not play in a bowl game. Brian Kelly decided to ditch out on a New Year's Six bowl game to go to LSU. When we think about, like, players changing from school to school, do we think that there's a similar issue with coaches having to change from school to school?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And this is another thing that we really talk about a lot on the podcast is, like, I think the most common argument that one could make about the transfer portal is that you can just, you know, why can these coaches pick all their stuff up and take a big contract at these different schools, and, you know, the recruits that you know come in and get recruited by these coaches are told that they're going to be there for a while, this and that, and, you know, a big contract comes around, these coaches take another job, and they're kind of left to, you know, left with a new staff, a whole, you know, a whole different, you know, group of coaches that they weren't even recruited by. And I think there's got to be a way to, you know, I think that there's possibility to make flexibility in the transfer portal where you're able to give, you know, some kids the option of being able to transfer if their coach, you know, ends up, you know, signing a larger contract somewhere else, or, or, you know, or gets fired. And I think it would also keep a lot, I think adding some sort of regulation, you know, for in the transfer portal that would allow these, that would allow these kids to transfer if coaches take another job. I think it would, you know, I think it would encourage a lot of athletic departments to hold on to the coaches that they currently have and keep giving them, you know, more of a chance. Because, you know, if they leave, you know, they have to, number one, give a huge payout, you know, depending on the coach. But, you know, it also poses a, you know, a little bit of a, I think it poses a lot of, you know, issues within your own program and, you know, players wanting to leave. And I think there's ways to do that. What that is, I don't know. That's the NCAA's job. And it doesn't seem like they're doing a lot to, you know, figure out this problem that we're seeing in college sports now.
You know, I think about it. Yeah, that is an issue with coaches leaving. But coaches, they have to live up to their contract. They're under legal obligations and that type of thing. You know, so, you know, schools can play a big part in keeping coaches there if they do their business right. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's about teaching kids. Like, make a commitment. You have to live up to a commitment to it. And to just be able to leave at any time for any reason, it just, I just don't, that isn't the way the world works. And where, you know, you make a commitment, you, and if you step away from that commitment, you, I got to at least sit a year. I have no problem. If a kid wants to leave, leave. You're having a bad experience, but to be able to leave anytime, anywhere, and go and be immediately eligible, it just, to me, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I think another issue that, you know, that I think kind of brought light to the issue before the whole transfer portal, you know, regulations got passed, I think was seeing like a lot of these, you know, a lot of these, you know, a lot of these highly touted, you know, quarterbacks being able to, you know, go and transfer other places because, you know, they got mistreated in their program, this and that. Like Justin Fields was able to transfer right away. And then, but like other guys that I know who became successful, you know, had great transfer opportunities. Alohi Gilman, who's in the NFL now, he was a, you know, a huge influence on me at Notre Dame. You know, he had to sit a whole year and he had to be on scout team when he was, you know, arguably our best defensive back, you know, the year that he had to sit out. And that could have added so much value to our program, having him in our back seven. But there were so many guys that had to transfer and sit a year, which I think makes sense. But, you know, I think a lot of people in the past were, you know, put it on fair disadvantages, like Alohi that had to sit out an entire year when other guys are just, you know, just going up and you're picking up their stuff and transferring wherever they want to, like Justin Fields. It was the same year as Justin Fields went to Georgia. And I think that the positive side of things were shown with, you know, with transfers like that, but it actually created a lot of unfairness, you know, in the sport, because, you know, why does Georgia get to have this guy in a free transfer, but Notre Dame doesn't get to have, you know, one of the best DBs in the country get to play that year? I think there's a little, I think that, you know, the NCAA, I think that there's a little bot. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but I think there's stuff going on that not a lot of people know about. And I think it was pretty unfair to Notre Dame specifically, because, you know, they have guys wanting to transfer into their programs, guys have to sit out, and then one of the other, you know, programs competing for a national championship also gets to, you know, bring on a, you know, a highly touted QB, or excuse me, Ohio State. I was saying Georgia, but yeah, I think that the only positive side of that whole year was shown. And I think that the unfair side of things wasn't really highlighted enough whenever they were making that decision to basically make it open season, transfer anywhere you want. You know, I think there's definitely I think there's a lot that has to be put in place to be able to make this a fair situation for all these teams, all these players. And what that is exactly, I don't know, but there's plenty of thinking to be done, and it doesn't seem like there's anything being done about it. So,
in the end, the NCAA got called out for being a fraud, which they were, and they should have been called out for being a fraud. And like, so they changed all the rules and basically said, go do what you want, because they didn't like the bad publicity.
No doubt. And I think that they just were bent to the pressure a little bit. And I think you're right. I think that they just, it just, I think it, it goes down as one of the biggest, like, I think it just goes down as one of the biggest masterclass leadership, just awful foresight. I think there was just so much awful foresight and leadership by the NCAA, and now they've just been, you know, they've been totally exposed, and they've just lost complete control of the situation, and it needs to be fixed. Otherwise, I think college football could completely change. And it's such a, I grew up watching so much college football. I still watch college football every Saturday, like all day, every Saturday. But whenever, I just think it's going to make the game, I think it's going to make the seasons less competitive. I mean, even last year, I'm not saying this is entirely because of the transfer portal, but when you really think about it, there was probably only six or seven like great, great teams that, that made up college football last year. And
six or seven, big stretch.
Yeah. I mean, that's even a stretch, but like, you know what I'm saying? I think it's going to make it a lot less competitive, in my opinion.
So when we talk about the current landscape of college football today, we mentioned some of the failings of the NCAA. We've talked about how recruiting can be condensed in power. Is there anything in college football that you see today that you go, this has been an improvement over the last 5-10 years?
Who?
You
can't think of anything, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not against, like, I think it's good that some of the players are making money. I don't think they need to be making hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. I mean, that's not that time of their life that should be happening. But I don't think the game's as good right now. That's just my opinion. And I look at it from a football standpoint. I just don't think it's in a great place. And I don't know if it's going to get better. We'll see. I don't know. And I'm just not talking about the roles. I'm talking about the product as well.
I think, I don't know how much college football has been improved in the last 5 to 10 years, but I think what the NCAA has done well is at least trying to, to make improvements as far as creating, equitable opportunities for other women's sports that I personally enjoy. My buddy Jake Rittman from Notre Dame, his dad's the head softball coach at Clemson, and seeing college softball kind of grow as a sport has been really cool. I think that giving all these athletes, the hype that they deserve for putting in work on a day-to-day basis is great. I think that's the one thing that I would say the NCAA has improved on, but I think there's definitely, a lot more that they have to do to, improve football specifically.
Well, and Coach, we've had some people when we announced that we were going to have this Twitter space just ask some questions. One of them that seems pertinent to what you just mentioned was I guess the username was LOL Smart, asked, well, what would be a big problem in college football today that you think could actually be fixed?
That I think could actually be fixed?
I mean, practically, because I mean, I agree with you. Things like NIL are the genie's out of the bottle and it's probably not going back in. But what are some things you think you would fix to make college football better?
I mean, to me, the first thing would be the first thing that I would fix would be the transfer portal. I think there's I think that some roles need to be changed there, and what the transfer roles are. And I just believe that kids should be taught that, you know, you make a commitment, you have to live up to it. At least to it. I'm not saying you got to stay for 4 years or, but there has to be, you know, it's a contract, and it's not like they're not getting anything. The people are recruiting them. The schools are, in essence, paying them. They're giving them a scholarship. They're investing money into them. That goes both ways. And I just think that I think you're teaching your kids the wrong thing when you're just when that isn't happening. I don't know what you know. I just think that that's a big part of it. I think that's one thing that needs to be changed.
Another one that we talk about on Beyond the Playbook podcast is how much coaches are getting paid out in buyouts. I think I don't even know the number that was paid out in buyouts, but we talk a little bit about like the hiring process in college football is being made by not every program, obviously, but a lot of people that really aren't qualified to make, you know, decisions for the university that they're representing. They're bringing in people that really haven't been a part of the product and that haven't actually been, you know, in a program, haven't played, haven't coached, haven't ever, some people hire consultants for, you know, for making these very important hiring decisions. And we go a little bit more into that, you know, on the Beyond the Playbook podcast, but I think that's another one we talked about. I don't know if you want to mention anything about that, Dad, but.
Well, yeah, I think that's, but I don't know if there's any, these schools and university have moved more towards lawyers or business people and people that don't have a sports background to make these decisions. And really, I mean, you could go to some of these consulting firms, they know less than those people. And I think that's a problem because they really don't know what they're buying. And that's why I think there's so much money being paid out is because they don't really know what they're buying in the first place.
And the example that
they might as well be throwing darts at a dartboard to go hire a coach.
Dad, and whenever we talk more about this on the podcast, the analogy that we've made, it's essentially like asking Bo Pelini to go hire the CEO of Apple. Like that makes no sense. It happens in college sports every single day. And that's something that, you know, we touch on on the Beyond the Playbook podcast. But I think, I think that there isn't enough light brought on the fact that a lot of unqualified people are making these hiring decisions. And that's the reason why, like, you know, the last few years has been the biggest, the NCAA, all their programs have paid the most money in buyouts in the history of college sports. And I think that statistic just shows that, you know, there's an issue that needs to be addressed and definitely needs to be fixed.
So as we're talking about hiring and people making decisions on this, Bo, you've been on the other side of being hired at multiple programs. How does a coach normally go about getting hired? Do you normally put in an application somewhere? Is it a call to an agent? Is it somebody just talking at a coach's convention to get something lined up? When you're normally on that other side, how does a coach like yourself normally get a job or position with a university?
Yeah, it's just usually it's through, you know, obviously word of mouth. You get, you make contact with somebody and then your agent gets involved and people show interest. And sometimes there's an interview process. Sometimes they know you're the guy and that interview process doesn't really go very far. And, I think every situation's a little bit different. And, you know, I don't know if sometimes it maybe the hiring process becomes I don't know if they put enough time into it. I don't know. You know, I think everyone's different. Probably every school approaches it a little differently. I was involved with a number of different searches, and every one was a little bit different. And I can tell you that the couple of them were absolutely dysfunctional, and some of them were pretty professional, I think, and fairly well run. But it was an eye-opening experience to go through, to say the least.
On the topic of interviewing for jobs, can you walk us through the process of how you decided to go home, go back to Youngstown, and be the head coach at Youngstown State? And what were your motivations there? And how did that all evolve?
You know, it was just it was a timing thing, really. I mean, Nebraska and I had just parted ways, and that was, kind of a pretty bitter time. And at that point, it wasn't about me at that point. My son Patrick, Patrick who's on this call, he was a sophomore. My other daughters were in grade school, and it was all about family at that point. It was, okay, where's the best place? Where do we want our kids to end up? And where do we want them to grow up? And I didn't want to start jumping around and looking for the next job. I wanted to make sure that, I knew that was a big point in there, especially Patrick was in high school already, that was going to be a big point of his life and something he was going to remember for a long time. I knew we weren't going to stay in Lincoln, so we said, where do we want to end up? So we were thinking, let's go back to where our family is. And we would go back there in the summers anyway, and he knew people. He had relationships. It was my chance to be, for them to grow up and be around family. And it just so happened that YSU job was open, and I reached out, and the interest was mutual, and it happened pretty quick. But that was obviously, it was a chance to go coach there, which I really enjoyed. But it was family first, and it was about where do we want our kids to be, and where do we want them to live next.
What does being from Youngstown mean to you?
I don't think I would have reached it. I think probably if you talk to Bob Stoops and Mark and Mike and my brother, just all the different people who came from there, coached there, all the different people who really are from the area. There's a real pride that comes from being from the city of Youngstown and the surrounding area. And, there's a toughness, a pride, a work ethic that was developed. And I think the people there, I think it's about the people and the principles that you learn, because they were driven into us from a young age. And I think that we all, everybody that's from there has a certain pride about them, about things they experienced and what the town represents. And I think it's a special place.
I know when you talk about special places in Youngstown, Cardinal Mooney has to be very high up there for the Pelini family. What has that place meant for y'all as a family?
Well, I think that, generations have gone through there. It's, like I said, it was many of the same things that that I just talked about. It's the pride, the principles that you were taught about putting the good day's work in and the sacrifice necessary to have success and the discipline and the focus that are required and that were demanded from you every day, both at home growing up and then when you went to school, when you played sports and in everything you do. And I think that was a special play. We were with some great people. Coach Butchie coached us in football, and Coach Stoops was our defensive coordinator, and so many of the, it just made some lasting friendships. And I think that It was a special place. It's why we won a lot of state championships. And it wasn't just Mooney. Obviously, Mooney won a lot of state championships, but really there's a lot other – it was a lot of the guys that not only played with, but we played against. And it was a great experience growing up there. And I know when I went up, it's changed a little bit now. The dynamics of the city have changed a little bit. But back when we went, it was a hotbed of college football or of high school football. And there was a lot of talent that came out of there because I thought we were brought up the right way and we were taught the right way.
Yeah, and Cardinal Mooney was also – you know, Bo mentioned this a little bit, but Cardinal Mooney was a really good, pad to land on after, having to pick up all of our stuff and move high schools in the middle of it. And, I got to play with some great players and there was so much talent to come out of Mooney. And I think that, I don't think I would have gotten to Notre Dame if I didn't end up, if I didn't end up transferring to Mooney. And I was, pretty blessed to be a part of such a historic program in Youngstown. And we talk a little bit about that on our next podcast with our cousin Mark Pelini, who played for arguably one of the best high school who ended up playing for one of the best high school teams to ever walk out of Northeast Ohio with so much talent. And if you tune into our next podcast on Sunday, we talk a ton about those teams that came through Youngstown and in the Cleveland area and the surrounding areas in Northeast Ohio where there was a ton of great football being played. And I was super bummed out that I had to move out of Nebraska with all my friends and my family that I had down there, but it ended up being the best thing for me. And I would tell, any kid that, happened to be moving to the Youngstown area today that, that's a great spot to be if you want to play football. And, there's plenty of great football, besides Mooney in the area that kind of have helped a lot of people, get to where they are today. Definitely.
Is there a way to kind of quantify the effect the Youngstown, the greater Youngstown area has had on football, on the overall sport?
Well, I think it's been pretty big, not just play. People have played, coached. You can go right down the list and it's kind of hard, you talk to people that have been in college football and you mention the city of Youngstown and they take notice. They know. They've heard. They've either played with people or been coached by people that are from there. And there's just been a lot of people that have had success in the sport that have come from there. And I said that there's a lot of reasons. A big reason for that is because is the sacrifices that people made to allow that to happen. The people that coached them growing up and the way their parents raised them and the principles that city embedded into them. And I think I think there have been a lot of people that have benefited from that. And it really goes back a whole nother generation of people who made a lot of sacrifices to allow that to happen.
Definitely. It's had a little bit, of an economic downturn, ever since, the steel industry was, heavily hit in the community. But I think that, our grandparents and our parents that, grew up in that blue collar, kind of environment in Northeast Ohio, pick up your lunch pail and go to work, that gritty, those gritty traits that, are kind of developed just based on, the product of the people that you're surrounded by on a day-to-day basis. And you develop similar mindsets to the people you're around. So I think that's, a thing that has really helped people from Youngstown, you know, get to the places they've been with the hard work and the mindset to be able to go and play sports at a high level specifically.
Coach, when you were during your run with Youngstown State in 2016, you had one of those just Cinderella runs, going all the way to the national championship game as an at-large team. Could you just take us a bit through that? That was one of those exceptional seasons, and I know we've had some of our readers ask about it. Particularly, obviously, there was that great catch by Raider against Eastern Washington to get to Frisco for that title game. I mean, what kind of momentum was building during that season to take it that far and get into that title game? I think really I can only think of Sam Houston doing that several years earlier. I mean, it's such a rare thing to see an at-large team make it that far.
Yeah, but with that team, that was a team that just kept getting better. We improved a lot. The year before, we just for those couple of years, we just kept getting better, and that team just from the beginning of the year was getting better and better. We lost our quarterback for a few weeks in the middle of the season, and you know, so we went through that, and then our quarterback got healthy, and he ended up back in there at the end of the year and for that run. And we had great kids who came together who worked their ass off. And, I mean, heck, if we didn't start that, you know, that JMU team we played was really good and really talented. But, you know, we unfortunately started that game off so bad. I think we lost 28-14, I believe, and we were down 14-0 in the first minute and a half, it seemed like. And then the rest of the game was pretty even. We just couldn't get over the hump. But that was a fun group of kids to coach. I mean, a special team that came together and, you know, won some games on the road, which is never easy, and had to go to Eastern Washington, had to beat Jacksonville State, who I think was ranked in the top five. And so it was a fun ride. It was a great run.
Also, it was, I think, another reason why, you know, and I have a few buddies that are on this call, actually, that played at YSU, the same grade as me from other schools, from my school at Mooney. But they always talk about the quality of football that they played in the Missouri Valley Conference specifically. It's such a great football conference, and a lot of great football has been played. And obviously, like, you see, you know, a tremendous amount of talent from schools like North Dakota State, YSU, South Dakota State, Northern Iowa, et cetera. You could go on and on about all the teams in those conferences that have, you know, played great football. And I think that's a reason why, you know, they were able to make it so far that year, is because of the quality of football they were being played. They were playing good teams every single week, which I don't really think you see in all the conferences in the FCS. That's why, I mean, the Missouri Valley, I think, was huge for, you know, YSU to be a part of and have, you know, a lot of success that year specifically.
Yeah, I think that anybody who gets into the tournament from the Missouri Valley has a legitimate chance of making a run. And I think that was a good example of it.
Coach, I know that we are starting to run a little tight on time with a couple minutes left before we hit the hour, but one question that I definitely wanted to ask while we still had you: you have worked for or played for a Hall of Fame level list of guys, whether that's Earl Bruce and John Cooper over at Ohio State, Pete Carroll during your stint in the NFL, George Seifert, Les Miles, Bob Stoops. What do you think is the most valuable lesson that you learned from any of these coaches?
You know, I think I learned a little bit from, like you said, you mentioned all those guys, and I learned from every one of them. I learned things to do. I learned some things not to do. But I also learned along the way, you have to be yourself. Like, I think the worst thing a coach can do is, yeah, you want to try to take, you might have a ton of respect for somebody, almost idolize somebody maybe you work for, somebody who's mentored you. But if you try to be them, it's not going to work, because your personalities are different. Your backgrounds a lot of time are different. You can take things that you can apply to your trade and to your
to your team and to your profession, but you can't be that person. You better coach within your own personality, belief system. And I was so fortunate to be around some great coaches, and I think I was smart enough to be told that, and also told, you know, that people who invested in me, and they taught me the right principles, and I learned a lot. I mean, there were not just the guys you mentioned, but a lot of the assistant coaches along the way, and I was very fortunate. I was extremely fortunate. I mean, heck, I was coaching in the NFL when I was 25 years old, and it was a great opportunity. But I also was smart enough to listen. People, you know, I look at Pete Carroll and Coach Seifert. They took me under their wing, and I led. I worked hard. I kept my head down, nose to the grind, and I listened.
And Coach Carroll.
I tried to absorb as much as I could.
And Coach Pete, you talk about, you know, you haven't talked much specifically about him, but, you know, I think, and you mentioned that, you know, you weren't always very similar to the guys that you were around, but you always, you know, got the most, like, I think that your coaching personalities, you know, are you and Pete Carroll's are a little different. But I think that you guys just learned a lot from each other in different ways. And you just were, you know, open to, you know, different suggestions schematically, culturally, that helped, you know, the teams that you, you know, the defenses that you guys put together, you know, specifically with Coach Carroll. I don't know if you can talk much about him, but yeah, definitely that's something that you've always told me about.
Yeah. I mean, Pete's a tremendous competitor, and everybody sees all that. But, you know, our personalities are different. I mean, they just are. I mean, in some ways they're similar. I mean, I would say the competing aspect of things and maybe work ethic-wise, but we're different people in a lot of different ways. But we, you know, what we respected each other for those differences, and we always got along well, and I thought we benefited from those differences at times, and complimented each other. So, you know, I just don't think that there's not just one way to be, and you know, everyone's a little bit different, and you have to embrace those differences.
As we kind of get ready to wrap up here, one question I really kind of want to know, when folks go to listen to the podcast, which is of course Beyond the Playbook, we recommend people tune in. They've had one great episode so far. What are they going to learn about Bo Pelini? What do you want people to know more about you as you take them through this?
I think they're going to hear some stories that might give them some background on it. But it's like I said, we're going to try to give the people who tune in, hopefully we get a loyal following, and hopefully they're going to be entertained by it. And then they're going to learn some lessons along the way. Along the way, they're going to hear some stories that they're going to hear about, hear from acquaintances and different people that we have on, from former players, coaches, opponents, whatever it may be, business people. And I think people that have like views to us and see things a lot of the same way, and people we have a background with, and people that I hope that our listeners can benefit from, you know. And they're all going to be people that have had great success in different fields, both in sports and in business, and have a message to share with the people who listen. And I think that's what it's all about. It's not about telling Bo Pelini's story or Patrick Pelini's story. It's about giving the listeners, hopefully they get some value out of it.
Great stories. And there, you know, this is another part that we talk about on the Beyond the Playbook podcast, but the stories that we've, you know, that our fan, we had big, you know, we talk about, this is, you know, another motivation for starting the podcast, but, you know, we've mentioned how family has kind of encouraged us to do this, you know, because, you know, we've heard all of these great stories from all of these awesome guests that we're going to have on the show. But we want to make them known, and we want to tell a lot of great stories. And I think that's a really valuable skill that that Bo has that not a lot of people know about him. So being able to tell these funny stories that we hear at these big Sunday, you know, Italian dinners back in Youngstown, I think that's something that's going to be really cool about this podcast. So we appreciate that you guys are, you know, having us on tonight, and, you know, we're excited to, you know, hopefully do this again with you guys.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you guys on again anytime. And we just wanted to thank you both again. Thank you, Coach Bo Pelini. Thank you, Patrick Pelini. Again, their new podcast, Beyond the Playbook, debuted yesterday. We had a chance to listen to it. It's enjoyable. So check that one out. We went ahead and we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. It's been an hour. So on behalf of myself, on behalf of JD and Sirius, we hope you all have a great week as we head on towards the beginning of the season. We're in that dead zone that's kind of between Memorial Day and 4th of July weekend where everyone kind of flakes a bit. But we're getting there. We're getting closer. This was an enjoyable evening. We're glad for the guests that we had. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.